Welcome back to another edition of the Simpsons Studio Podcast. You have chosen your time wisely, I assure you of that, because the guest we have on today is a crowd favorite in the podcast community, the NASCAR circuit, and I am so blessed to have my cousin, Mike Davis, on episode 7. Like Mike Davis, y'all. The Mike Davis. He's the man. I am so glad you made it, because we about to give you some loving right now. Above being my cousin, or I guess maybe below it in my opinion, because we're like so lucky to have him in our family, Mike is the managing director of Dale Earnhardt Jr. brand, husband to sweet wife Sarah, and father to Gracie and Lily. Listen in as we talk Dale Jr., the circus of NASCAR community, the nationally syndicated podcast and TV program that Mike and Dale Jr. host called Dirty Mo Radio, Dale's New York Times best-selling book, Racing to the Finish, and even take a call from a devout fan. So take a pit stop and get tuned in. See what I did there?
What is wrong with you?
Chip, I'm all jacked up on my
dude. I love that.
All this and more on episode 7 of the Simpsons Studio Podcast. Green flag is up, so just give me the high gear. Let's go! My guest today is a favorite of mine, episode 7. I'm so excited. Very close to number 8, because he has a lot to do with the number 8 racing car. But one of my favorite cousins, one of my PR heroes for a long, long time is my guest today, Mike Davis. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well, Matthew. This is a big day for me personally. So I'm honored to be on the Simpson Studio podcast. I'm a big fan of this show. I'm a subscriber. I've listened to everyone. And by the way, it's not lost on me that you just said I was one of your favorite cousins, because I definitely remember you saying to Samuel in episode 2 that he was your favorite cousin. So I know what's up now. I know where I stand. That's fine. All anybody could expect is just to know where they stand.
Well, okay, so the pillar, you know, the little column that has Indians' heads on it, you know, whatever it's called, the totem pole, is granddaddy, and Mike and my mom are one of 6 sisters that have come through this great legendary lineage of the Alfano family, as Mike referenced, Samuel Gentle, Dr. Samuel Gentle, episode 2 guest I had on. And it's just, I'm not just grabbing family just to have them on as easy guests. Mike is an amazing person, as you'll come to know, as well as Dr. Sam. And the basis of the show, as I've said before, is just to shine the light on who they are and kind of where they get their foundation from, because it's not about what is great about Mike that's great about Mike. It's what about, you know, what's going on the inside that produces such fruit in his family and his career. And Mike always thinks I'm spinning my tires here, no pun intended, but it is true. I'm very excited to have this guest on today. I woke up at 5:30 a.m. The first thing I did as I went to my drawer, I grabbed a Sharpie out and I put on both hands, "Don't blow this."
Listen, I've listened to your guests. I am definitely the 7th on this totem pole. I mean, listen, Sam, I don't disagree with where you have Sam. Sam saves babies. I can't replicate that. You know, your wife, Jessica, your lovely wife, way better guest than I am. Well, your last guest plays the guitar. I got nothing talent.
There's something to be said about getting this thing off the ground until you're ready to interview, no lie, a guest like I have on. So Mike is a very busy man. I've kind of had him on my radar from the very beginning. I know he's just very, very busy, so I was very grateful to have him agree to come on. Mike has had an amazing stretch of just professional success, and it's not been overnight. It's just been a lot of hard work, grinding, late nights, early mornings. So, Mike, you started out as a columnist for the Albany Herald as a graduate of Georgia Southern. In your search, in your direction for a career, how did you wind up in the NASCAR circuit? And I know you kind of started out in different places, but how did you, were you looking for something in that type of platform, or were you looking for more of just a work that lined up with your skill set?
Well, to be honest with you, and I know that this sounds almost cliche, but I mean, it was all God driven. And I, you know, sometimes when I look back and I look at the trajectory of my life and my career, I just can't put, I can't make any sense of it a lot of times. So you just know that, like, this is, you know, you just try to follow God's will, and that's what I've done, and I've been truly blessed. As you noted, I was a journalism major. I aspired to be a journalist working for newspapers. That's what I went to college for. I was working at newspapers. So my first job out of college was at the Albany Herald, as you mentioned. And I was only there for a few months, but that was such a, maybe the biggest move of my life, because that's where I met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I met my wife in Albany, and I was just there for a short time. I was there for a football season, basically. I was the high school football beat writer in that area, and we just got into basketball season. And so, like, I got a call from a marketing agency in Charlotte that apparently I had sent a resume to a year before. This was back when I was in college.
Yeah.
And you know how it is in college.
Yeah.
You're about to graduate, and so you're just sending resumes out to anybody that will has a mailbox. And that's what I had done, and I'd probably sent 60 or 70 out at, you know, just a number of different places and a number of different professions. And, you know, I was working in the sports information and media relations field at the time in college.
Mm-hmm.
And the only, which is basically public relations and PR, and the only interest I had to make that a career was if I had got into NASCAR or, you know, perhaps college football.
Yeah.
But, you know, working for colleges wasn't that interesting to me. And it was just a shot in the dark. I mean, just sending resumes. Well, the marketing agency called me, and they had a job opening for a position working with a NASCAR team, and particularly a driver that was really hard to get along with. And so they were having a hard time filling this role. People were not staying. It was a driver that was really difficult to deal with. And so they called me. Which I'm sure I was way down the list of options, and yet here it was. They called me. I think I even turned it down. I'm like, I couldn't afford to drive to Charlotte and interview for a job. They weren't going to do it over the phone. I said no thanks. And then I got, you know, again, a God thing. I got a call back. They said, you know, would you reconsider? It makes no sense that they would call somebody that had zero experience, and they know nothing about me, calling back for me to reconsider. I gave them nothing to do that.
You had told them you politely declined prior to that.
Yeah. I said, no, I'm not interested. I mean, like, at the time, I had my job. I had the job I was chasing. I was a sports writer, right? You know, it's sort of funny what I was getting paid. I thought I'd made it, and I actually was just absolutely broke and didn't even know it, right? So here it is. I turned out, but they called me back several weeks later, and so I agreed to go up there an interview for the job, and I got it. And so I moved to Charlotte, and I left, you know, at the time I'm dating Sarah.
Yeah.
That wasn't an easy thing. And so Sarah, you know, was still wrapping up her master's degree at the University of Florida, and she was going to go finish that up. But still, you know, we were both working in Albany. You know, I was moving away. So I took the job in Charlotte. That was 2002. And mm-hmm. The driver that was so hard to get along with, I ended up being tremendously good friends with,
mm-hmm.
Even to this day. But that was 2002. And, you know, I moved to Charlotte on a Monday, and I flew out to Daytona for Speed Weeks on a Tuesday, immediately, because Speed Weeks had already started. The start of the season had already begun. And I was off and running. I was working for Dale Jr. 2 years later, mm-hmm. in 2004.
You said people were coming and going quite often with that driver. Was it the position you had, or was it just staff overall? Or was there something different that you did that kind of made you have a little bit more stickability?
I think that I was just young and dumb. I think that that was a strategy. The driver was hard to get along with. He was really, really aggressive with his PR people. And it was all a game, I soon found out later. I mean, like, I it's so funny because he tried the game with me, and I had a bit of a temper, I guess. But the thing is that I had no better job in NASCAR to compare it to. So, like, the people they were hiring already were coming either from a previous NASCAR job or working with other drivers. Right. And they were like, man, this is terrible. I hate this. I had it better where I was.
Yeah.
I didn't have it to compare it to. I was like, get me in the door, and then I'm just going to – it's up to me to make it work. So that's the mentality I had.
2002, that was the year you just left off on. I'm reading some material about you over at Fingerprint Inc., the media relations and publicity agency for Anheuser-Busch, the sponsorship for number 8 at the time. I read the director said that when they hired you in 2003, they had likened it to picking the first pick of the draft. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I wrote that for them. I'm kidding. I didn't write it. I don't remember that. That's funny. I mean, listen, I think that speaks more to the fact that the guy that hired me was really ready to get off the road full time. And again, I'm the young and dumb guy that doesn't know any better. At the time, I was just like, let me see the world, man. And so, I had in my 2 years, my first 2 years, I had really had to get imaginative with a lot of the PR work that I had, because I wasn't with a front-running driver. I was with, baby, you know, it was like a mid. It was a lot of fun, by the way. I had a blast with the teams I was working with, but you know, I had to get creative in generating attention and generating publicity, which was what my job was. And so, in 2003, I had landed an article in Sports Illustrated, which was for us was impossible, right? And it's like.
Yeah.
With the driver I was with and with the team I was with, you know, we didn't really have any business being in NASCAR Illustrated, let alone Sports Illustrated. So I think that sort of, brought some attention. And then the guy that hired me was Dale Jr.'s publicist through Fingerprint Incorporated. So Fingerprint Incorporated was Anheuser-Busch's PR firm.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that, ran the publicity and PR for Dale Jr. And so when he hired me and at the end of the 2003 season to start 2004, that was what I was doing. I was coming in to kind of let this other guy get off the road full time and let me kind of take over the day-to-day duties.
Yeah, if you could, in a quick summary, what were some of your responsibilities to make the driver overall seem more positive in the light, in the media and the fan coverage and overall? What were some of the things you had to do in the morning, at night, during the day, after the race, pre-race? What were just kind of the long list, if you could summarize that?
So back then you're talking about, like, because I don't do PR anymore, but back then when I was doing that, I mean, it was a lot of writing, which is what I love to do anyways, and I was pretty good at it. So, a lot of writing, a lot of generating and working on relationships with the media. You know, you got to come in and you got to start developing a rapport with the media, the national media, start building that Rolodex. And so that's what I really devoted a lot of attention to, while also trying to, work on a rapport with my driver and my teams. You got to do that, and they got to end up trusting you, and you got to earn it. So it's not like it's going to be something that just comes, Listen, my first week at Daytona was a nightmare, man. It was a nightmare. My guy was absolutely going out of his way to not do whatever I asked or needed him to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was hysterical when you look back at it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they would tell me, hey, put this hat on your guy. Which I guess we should just say, I mean, I'm talking about Jimmy Spencer. I can only talk, for those of you who may know who Jimmy Spencer is, he's kind of an aggressive guy, and I love him to death. He came to my wedding down in Florida.
Yeah, I remember. I met him.
So Jimmy was he's a sweetheart of a guy, but man, was he just loved to just do these things to his PR people. And it was like, hey, y'all make sure Jimmy wears this hat. Jimmy wouldn't wear a hat only on the premise that I asked him to, right? I mean, it was just like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That first week was a nightmare, but it really, we had a real big come to Jesus conversation. I'll call it that. I kind of just lost it.
Yeah.
And he thought that was awesome and hysterical. And he said, man, this is my guy. And we were just, it was a dream after that. It was like the 1 week of nightmare. And then we just hit it off instantly. And so I would just, I would try to get media to pay attention to Jimmy. And so when we would, you know, when we would go to a city, I would have hopefully developed a rapport with the local media, and I would try to line it up. I would do a lot of pitching.
Yeah.
I'd take a lot of media out to dinner, and I would make promises that I didn't know that I could back up.
You know,
Jimmy would love to do 2 hours with you at a golf course.
Right.
And not having asked Jimmy to do it.
Exactly.
But I knew at some point that, they would do it. They knew I wasn't going to waste their time. I think that's a big dip part of it. You know, making efficient use of time and generating publicity, and also just, you know, there comes a lot, just, you know, the wear and tear of the season. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of races, all that stuff kind of plays into it. And those first 2 years were just still me getting acclimated to what this industry really is.
Right.
And it really kind of set me up. Again, I think that it was necessary. I think this, again, is a God thing. It was necessary for me to go through it with Jimmy before I could ever get to Dale, because by the time I got to Dale, I pretty much knew how this has to work.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with recent NASCAR Hall of Fame inductee Mike Davis.
Yeah, right.
And and as you progress, as you learn what works, what doesn't work, you kind of fine-tune your own personal career, yet you're working for a firm, yet you're working for yourself. You need to, you know, self-manage, self-promote, game plan about, you know, all the things you have to get done, you have to prioritize, and all that great learning field, that learning background through your first driver was so instrumental in your development. Here's something I want to ask, Mike, as you advance to working with Dale, how did that relationship start? Because I'm interested in the fact that, you know, the team of Jimmy Stewart needed someone like you to kind of counter himself. Whereas Dale, it seems to me that Dale needed someone that was very like-minded, very even keel, very likable and similar to him. Was that the draw that made y'all kind of connect? What was that bridge there?
Well, you know, that's interesting. It was a completely different type of job for sure. Just because Dale Jr. is Elvis in this industry, and he was at the height of his popularity when I came in 2004. As a matter of fact, our very first race, my very first race with Dale Jr., he won the Daytona 500. I mean, you win the Daytona 500, you're forever etched in kind of an upper echelon of racers all time. It took his dad, who's a legend, 18 or 19 tries to win a Daytona 500. So Dale's winning it in like his third or fourth try. So that was a big deal. It was a memory I'll always have, and it's also kind of the moment I realized, wow, this is not Denny Spencer. This is Dale Earnhardt Jr. So what I did with him is that now you're just managing an onslaught of attention and opportunities, and you're trying to, you know, maximize opportunities with Budweiser, who has, you know, what seemed like endless budgets and you know, enormous influence in the sports world, not just NASCAR, obviously, but like, you know, now we found ourselves doing, you know, things that were amazing. Rolling Stone, MTV Cribs, just stuff that was just incredible. And so that's what it kind of became for me with Dale Jr. And I did that for 2004, 2005, 2006. And then I ended up coming to work directly for Dale Jr. at Junior Motorsports in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And my job there sort of shifted. It became a little bit less PR focused and more managerial focused.
Mm-hmm.
I still did a lot of elements of both, but Dale at the time knew that he was going to be making a transition, which was going to be a very public transition from his family-owned DEI to the competing team of Hendrick Motorsports, and that was something he knew was coming down the pipeline, and we didn't know how that was going to be received by the fans and the media, because, you know, again, it's like you're leaving the family business.
Yeah.
In other words, you're leaving Dale Earnhardt, the Intimidator. So that was going to be something. So that's why I came and worked for Dale in 2007, and that has sort of evolved into what I am doing today, which is running his brand, his entire brand. I got a brand team. We manage everything to do with his career and his businesses, his schedule. We put a book out last year that ended up being a New York Times bestseller. It's still actually out there. New York Times bestseller. We do a lot of TV stuff. So even though he's retired from full-time driving, it's even gotten busier for me, if that makes any sense, because our brand work is just beginning.
Absolutely. You are the current communications director at, is it Junior Motorsports or JR Motorsports?
It's both. It depends on who you ask. Dale Jr. calls it JR Motorsports. That's one of the, you know, to be a brand guy, that's something you think we would have fixed for first on, but like people call it both. Junior Motorsports is an interesting company because it's two pronged.
We have four competitive national race teams
in the Xfinity Series, but we also manage Dale Jr. So like it's a managerial company and a race operation. And so I tend to be more on this managerial side of Dale Jr. I don't necessarily work on the race cars or even go to those races for our race teams.
This is a first for the Simpson Studio podcast. It looks like we actually have a caller on the line. His name's Daddy Gene from Lubbock, Texas. Daddy Gene, are you there?
Man, you're so funny, Matt. Hey, is Mike still on?
Yes, Mike Davis, you're on with Daddy Gene.
That's the old high school name, man. Hey, look, hey, Matt, I really appreciate you letting me call. Is Mike still on?
Daddy Gene, you're on the line. Go ahead.
That's a nickname. Look, Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah, Daddy Gene, I can hear you.
Man, call me Bo, man. I'm sorry. I went to high school with Matt's wife, Jessica. So I've been following his podcast, and he promotes it real well, and when he said you were coming on, man, I asked him if I could call. I really appreciate y'all letting me talk and ask you a few questions. But I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Dale Jr. So I actually met you. I didn't know you until I saw Dirty Bo, but I remember seeing you at – I never missed Dega. I was there for a lot of the big ones. I was there in his streak when he was had four straight. And I missed 04 at Daytona, but saw 14 and was there. Man, I just a huge fan. But, look, I didn't know it was you till – I started watching the Dirty Mo podcast. I was like, man, I met that dude. And then Matthew, he said he was going to have you on, man. I just wanted to call and just tell you how big of a fan I've been. And I just love what y'all are doing, man. Is it okay if I ask you just a couple of questions?
Well, hold on a second. By Bo, do you mean Bo Jackson?
Well, Bo Benson. Gene Benson's my real name.
Well, what do they call you? Do they call you Bo or do they call you Bo Jackson?
Hey, you can call me whatever you want.
All right. I always call you Bo Jackson.
Daddy Gene's old high school name. I went to Escambia High School with Jessica. You know, Matthew moved in, and he's one of those guys. You know, Jessica's an athlete. She's real cute, and he's one of those guys from out of town that comes in and marries a sweetheart. She kind of pissed me off.
We talked about this, Bo, okay?
She's a hell of a softball player, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, yeah. She's a home run. Okay, so go ahead. What's your question, Bo?
Daddy Gene.
Matthew, why are you telling him I call him Daddy Gene? Just call me Bo, man.
Hey, Bo. Where do you live, Bob? Do you know where I can find me somebody that can build me a good house?
Hey, hush your mouth. It's my podcast now.
Oh, man. Let's just call Will and Jamie and Andrew and Sammy and Teddy. We'll just have a big old holiday special right now.
Will, stop.
Will, quit.
Oh, man. This is where everybody else drops off and we just have fun ourselves with our inside jokes.
Hey, look, man, my only question was, did you have it when you got on Dirty Mo and all that stuff, you're so darn funny. Did you have any other formal training like other than going to journalism school or communication school or whatever it is you do? I mean, did you do stand up or what? Or is that just, is your daddy funny? Is your mama funny? Where's that come from?
Well, that's a great question, Daddy Gene. I had this cousin, his name's Alan. He was a real knucklehead, if you want to know the truth. And so he sat me down a long time ago and told me if I was ever going to make it, I had to do what he did. And so I've basically just been kind of emulating my life after my cousin Alan and just seeing where that takes me. And that's what I've done. I mean, that's why I'm here.
That's what I'm doing. That's why I'm here.
Hey, look. Little boy from Ringgold's that done exceeded everybody's expectations. Everybody else is trying to make it, and you just sitting there, you just taking off, man. We're so proud of you.
Oh man, well listen, again, I have to give all the credit to my cousin Alan and his family. They're the ones that sort of paved the way for me.
Well listen, you see your daddy, you tell him, hello, Taco Bell.
Oh my gosh, man. I'll do that.
You call anytime, Bo. Open invite.
Hey buddy, we're a big fan of you, man. We love you. From Lubbock to Pensacola to Behan, man. We love you.
I love you too, Daddy Alan.
Don't forget about us. We're here.
Don't forget about me. I'm trying to, you know, get in touch with you. I had breakfast with you not too long ago, and it was the highlight of my life.
Me too, brother. We're proud of you, man.
All right, Daddy Gene.
Hey, y'all continue on, man. I'm proud of you.
Thanks for calling in.
All right. Daddy Gene out, a.k.a. Bo Jackson.
Wow. I was not expecting that. That just, you know, it was uncoordinated. That was just, you know, just kind of happened. I don't even know how people take calls on podcasts. I don't know if we're set up for that. Our budget is not really big. So looks like we had a caller. So, again, that's the things you're going to get when you have a guest, like we have on today. So Mike, I wanted to talk real quick, if you could, take us inside the gates of NASCAR. What's the NASCAR community, each team differently? I'm sure it's like a microcosm. What do you have inside there? You got these drivers who are, you know, young guns kind of trying to blow smoke, and you have some more veterans. What's it like inside there? Is it pretty, you know, calm these days, or is, you know, unlike it was maybe a decade ago? What's kind of the progression of the culture there?
It's a traveling circus, and I really mean that. I mean, like, we all live in the same area, but we're all, you know, you see most of the people on the road in these, you know, different markets and different towns. And so everybody sort of knows each other, and, you know, it doesn't matter which team you work for. In fact, you know, when you've been in a lot, I'm kind of one of the rare people. I haven't worked for that many different people. I've been in the sport, you know, 16, 17 years, and I've only worked for just a couple different places. And so, you know, you don't necessarily have that, but it's a very, it's a stressful industry. I would never call it calm. You know, it's all driven on corporate sponsorships. And so there's a lot of anxiety that comes with that, because with corporate sponsorships, you know, there is no job security. You know, that just tomorrow somebody, you know, you can get a new CEO of a company that's sponsoring a race team, and you get a new CEO, and they can have completely different ideas on how to spend and allocate their money. And so it's hard on families as well. I mean, you would imagine that between 36 to 40 weeks out of the year, that's most of the year.
Wow.
And it's you know, most of these race guys and teams, I mean, they leave on Thursdays and they get back late Sunday nights, and so that's half the week. And so you know, and then Monday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, they're, you know, thrashing on race cars and getting them ready. It's hard on families. I have been just so blessed that I work with somebody and for somebody like Dale Jr. That when I had kids, when I had my first daughter, Gracie, I, you know, as you know this, your priorities completely change.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, it was about you, yourself, and now it's like, no, the rest of my life is going to be dedicated to making, you know, choices for my kid, my daughter, you know, and it's like, it's all about her now. And so I knew that there are so many people in NASCAR that miss their child's entire childhood, you know, and also it gets really hard on marriages. And I just didn't want that for me. I was ready and willing to leave the sport if I had to continue to travel, and Dale Jr. completely got it.
Yeah.
He understood. He knew where I was coming from. So I basically became more, became what we would call it, off the road, right? The road full time. Didn't mean I don't travel. I still do. But the continuous weekly grind of traveling and all that stuff changed in 2009. And he said, why don't you hire somebody that can do it? Like, so we hired some kid that was much like me.
That's great.
Back in 2002.
Yeah.
It was ready to see the world, didn't really have family, you know, and was ready to just go after it, and that's what we did. And so I was blessed, man. I, like, that's the climate that I work in, and yet I was placed in a position to which I had a boss that was so accommodating to my situation. And when I knew I had kids, man, it was a game changer.
Yeah. Mike has always been so fun to watch and grow, and just all for the right reasons. So grounded, so humble, been very generous personally to me when I was working for the Waterfront Rescue Mission. We had a charity to raise money for the program, and Mike and his team were very generous in donating a fire protective fire suit, fire pit crew suit. I think it was a tax layer sponsorship at that time. And also, Mike was very generous. If you've never gotten a chance, you've got to go. He gave us my brother, my father, and myself tickets to Daytona. And it was like I hadn't been to any race before. I'll self-admit that. But to go to this first big Super Bowl of races, as they call it, was pretty remarkable. I remember my dad and I went, and we were all excited, not knowing what to expect. And we sit in the press box that Mike so graciously gave us to sit in. And then, you know, a few laps go by, we're excited, this is awesome. This sounds like you never heard before. And about five laps, my dad's like, I'm tired. Let's get out of here. My dad was not for the one to kind of stick around a lot of things. He liked to see a venue, then he liked to get take a little nap. So
that was
a fun day.
But listen, I love taking people to a race for the first time, and I never have any expectations on how long they stay. That's up to them.
We stayed the whole time. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. I was really, it was so cool seeing you guys there that year.
It was cool to see you there because it was in your element and your atmosphere. And we did stay the whole race. It was a couple wrecks toward the end. I think one of the drivers, I can't forget who won, came with his tail blazing towards the finish line. So that was pretty neat.
I had forgotten about the fire suit that I had sent you, but I know this. I'm so proud of all what you've done with these missions, and it's amazing to me what the work you're doing. And I was happy to send you whatever you wanted for that thing.
Yeah, it did. I think it was the highest auctioned item, so that was great. Hey, Mike. So the advertisement and the thing that y'all are working towards the most is to promote Dale's new book, Racing to the Finish. I got a chance to kind of read a little bit up on that, and it's a pretty honest, retrospective look at Dale's career, his hidden concussions, kind of his decision to retire last year after 18 years of racing. But the main thing that kind of stood out to me, really two things, just kind of how personal that was to him that he kept to himself that maybe you knew about, maybe you didn't know about, but you know, his own personal struggle with that. And this show is there's three things this show is based on. It's faith, life, and wisdom. And you've already done all that past 10 minutes. But the faith that Dale contributes to get through that trial in his life, can you talk about that?
I mean, it was I don't even know where to start, actually. I mean, it was, as you said, in recap, I mean, Dale was keeping a lot of things to himself, and nobody knew what was going on, and yet he was getting in wrecks, and he was dealing with basically a brain injury. People would consider that a very extreme way to call it a concussion, but untreated concussions that continue to stack on top of each other become a danger, and he's not telling anybody, because race car drivers are hard-headed, to be honest with you, and because it's like any professional athlete. They don't want to tell you that they're hurt because they've got contracts and they've got, people counting on them and they got fans and they got this, that, the other. And they always have this pervasive fear that if they get out of the race car, someone else better is going to come in and replace them. And that's going to be the end of it. It's kind of like, Tom Brady was the backup to Drew Bledsoe for the Patriots. Drew Bledsoe got hurt. Tom Brady comes in, fills in, wins the Super Bowl, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same mentality. So Dale was hiding a lot of stuff. And it was as the story unfolded and we found out what was really going on, you come to find out that it was a blessing, a silver lining. It forced him out of the race car, which obviously sounds terrible, but it also becomes this introspective period in which he was able to prioritize and process on what really matters. And a lot of times, man, you know, this is not a cliche, but, you know, all of us go so fast in our lives that what we really could do is just slow down and not take things as serious and actually understand what it is that matters and where are you going to find your happiness. He wasn't happy. He was, you know, he was making a lot of people happy.
Yeah.
And that became sort of his mission, but he wasn't happy himself. And a lot of times, man, it's those setbacks that force you to go, wait a second, what am I doing here? This is not, you know, the things that I feel like I'm trying to find my fulfillment, my joy in my life, it's not actually giving it to me.
Yeah.
It's actually making me more miserable. And yet, the key to joy is not where I thought it was. It's not in wins or trophies or, you know, because those will never fulfill you. What fulfills you is, you know, your faith, your family. And that's the kind of stuff that, he had to go through this concussion experience to kind of learn it himself. And, you know, that would be my best way to sort of characterize the book and why Racing to the Finish was necessary. He was going to write this book regardless. I mean, it was therapeutic for him.
Yeah.
And it was also something that he felt like needed to be told, because there's a lot of people that deal with this. Hey, listen, it doesn't even have to be concussions. You know this. It doesn't have to be a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's concussion can become in the form of anything.
Absolutely.
Like whatever thing is holding you down. And there's hope. There's hope to that. Where are you going to find that hope? Well, first you got to know there is hope. And what you and I know, what was so great about your mission work is that, you know, we know where we find our hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
You and I do.
Yeah.
And what we try to do is be a testimony to others so they can find their hope in Christ, so they can find their hope through their faith. But a lot of times, you know, when you just, if you were to tell somebody that without them having to kind of go and get knocked down and shut up a little bit, it doesn't even make sense to them. So in that regard, Racing to the Finish is a very faith-driven book in that it tells the story of a man that was knocked down and out, and he found a way to get back, and he found it through the help of a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's you said that right. I mean, and informational, you can talk to Gracie and Lily all about the lessons of life, but until they actually go through it and understand it, different than learning it versus understanding it. And you're right. You know, finding the hope. If you think, you know, your hope is to be the best driver in the NASCAR history, you know, sooner or later you're not going to be. You may be for 5-10 years, but if your hope is to always have this pedestal that you must amount to, like Dale was, you know, he was always just trying to meet that identity that he was supposed to hold. So I think that's so refreshing. I'm sure you saw a change in his identity and his personality since then. And now you get to see him. You get to see him every Thursday, every podcast for the Dale Jr. Download, and you get to sit next to him and talk about, you know, the racing scene and questions. Talk about that briefly, Mike.
Okay. First of all, I mean, Dale's in my office every day. I mean, now that he's not driving and not going to every race, I mean, he's now a TV broadcaster, but he works for NBC Sports, but NBC doesn't take over the NASCAR schedule until the back half of the year. That starts in July. So right now, like Dale, I mean, we're doing a lot of brand work. So one of the things that I did several years ago was start Dirty Mo Media, which is a multimedia network that is all, you know, original content that we do. We do podcasts, we do video series, we do a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a staff, I got a team of videographers and creators. And so we had started a podcast years ago called the Dale Jr. Download. Initially, Dale wasn't even a part of it. It was us recapping Dale Jr.'s races. But over time, he started becoming more interested in it. Kind of took over as host. And so we've got this podcast, Dale Jr. Download, where Dale and I host it. And it is a podcast first and foremost. It's not a television show. Although last year, NBC Sports bought in and wanted to make it a weekly television show. Last year, it came out, last year, the television portion of our show came out on Thursdays. This year, it's on Tuesdays now. So we just started a couple weeks ago with our new season. The Dale Jr. Download comes out on the podcast comes out Monday evenings. The television show airs an hour on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern on NBC Sports Network. So that's what we do. We're having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
It's blowing up, man. I mean, like, the podcast itself actually does way better than the television show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's fun. We also have started other podcasts, not that Dale's not a part of, but like Dirty Mo Media properties. So we're growing that business. Get this. Now we've got offers to go do live shows, live tour, you know, in theaters and that kind of thing, which is probably something we're going to start doing this year. So
really, to a show in the theater?
Yeah, I don't know what theater, but we've had offers to go develop a road show.
All right.
You know, I told them I'm not doing it unless Fort Walton Beach is
tour. Come on now. Well, there are some, I mean, Lower Alabama, as most of those areas is sometimes referred to, there's some people who would get in on that as a, you know.
Now,
there's some country boys around
Alabama
here.
Alabama is a hotbed of Dale Jr. fans.
Yeah.
Talladega, Alabama, man, I mean, like, Birmingham, there's a lot of Dale Jr. fans in Alabama.
You know where y'all should do it? Y'all should do it at Floor-Bama. That would draw a crowd.
Well, listen, I'm telling you, if you want to be our manager, then we'll just put you on that job.
I'm having a lot of fun here. You know, insurance is my day job. I do this little podcast is a fun hobby, healthy hobby, and it's been a joy to have you on, Mike. Let's talk about really quickly as we close out. I know they're the first things in your life, but they're on the back side of the show. Lily and Gracie and Sweet Sarah, how are they growing? What are the best things you start to see in their life as they continue to grow up?
Oh man, every day is an adventure. I mean. You got a couple of awesome, beautiful kids yourself. Gracie's now 10, Lily's 6, she'll be 7 in June. You know, it's just like every day is just, you know, I'm learning how to still be a parent. I don't think you ever learn that. I think it's always an evolving thing that, you know, parents make mistakes too. And so it's like you hope that your mistakes don't have long lasting effects, negative effects on your kids. Great, you know, like yesterday I left work and went to their school and had lunch with them, kind of surprised them. Those are my moments that I cherish. I'm just trying to make memories with them, go and do things with them. I took Gracie to her first Alabama game this past year and didn't know what she would think about it. It's not like I'd try to, you know, I wanted her to see what the state of Alabama does for college football, like even Auburn people. And it's like, she's really getting into that. She's really good at soccer.
Cool.
She's, you know, just her and Lily are so different, but they just have their own sweet characteristics that just, man, I mean, it's what I live for now. I love being a dad and I love, I love being the dad of girls. Ask me again later. I'm a different feeling. But I love being their dad and that's what my identity is. It's all about just trying to be there for them.
Yeah. Well, it's really inspiring to I knew you were always going to be that in that space as a father, but to see you just have joy in what you do at work, it's like, man, that's if you're having fun with work and you're showing your light as you're supposed to shine the light of Jesus wherever you go, and then that's working out for you and you're not kind of being hindered by that. You're having fun and you're showing all the life abundant that you're supposed to live through that. And you come home and do the same thing. I mean, that is life and that is life to the fullest. And, I know both of our parents have kind of have that influence on our life. Aunt Grace, shout out, and, sweet Uncle Pat, amazing parents of Mike Davis who have just instilled such, grounding in him. It's always kind of cool to see the roots kind of continue to grow in Mike's life from that.
And to be honest with you, I saw your parents, Aunt Sally, Uncle David, on a FaceTime just last week.
Really?
They were all, I think they were up at Gatlinburg, and they had all stopped in Ringgold have lunch and hang out. And so my dad FaceTimed me, and I mean, it had every one of them, all the aunts right there in one room. But your dad was there, your Aunt Sally was there. It was great to see them. I love talking to them. Me and your mom share a birthday, so you know, we're forever connected. And I love calling her on that day.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's a treat. You know, and listen, you know this. We're blessed to be in an amazing, loving family. Are we not?
I do not take it for granted. I mean, I do not take it for granted. It's amazing. It's a each person in that family is just has so much unique awesomeness. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, listen, what I could never have appreciated then, but I absolutely am blown away now, because now that I'm a parent, we know how like a kid can derail your enjoyment just with that they don't like the food or somebody playing with their toy, is how big our family is and how small Granddaddy and Granny's house was in relation to how many people we packed in that thing every holiday.
Yeah.
It's like just on Granddaddy's side, we had 15 cousins, 15 of us.
Yeah.
You, your brothers, your sister, you know, my brother and sister. And then all, you know, it what do you do with them all?
Yeah.
And it's, like,
yeah.
I didn't appreciate that then. I cannot believe that our parents and Granny and Granddaddy kept their sanity.
There was not even
the easiest bunch.
There was a front yard, but there wasn't even a backyard to hold us. There was a garage and a little trampoline we used to jump on. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember that. I remember a lot. I got a lot of great memories. I always look forward to our times in Birmingham, Granny's meatballs, Granddaddy's diabetes shots.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everything just looks back. I look back on it, man. It was just an amazing time.
Well, Granddaddy was a very sensitive, awesome guy, and he had so much pride when talking about his grandchildren. And I know early on when he heard about your success, you know, he pulled out his little notepad from his little pocket shirt and would write things down, when your races were and all that stuff. And I think I do credit a lot of Granddaddy, his spirit in us, because like you said, 30 deep in that small house, and yet Granddaddy had that big grin, that big smile, just loving it all. He had that calm under pressure, and I think, wouldn't you say you kind of have a little bit of that and when you're dealing with all the craziness of NASCAR? You have to.
You gotta have thick skin, and you gotta have a steady demeanor for sure, because a lot can happen. But you know, when you talk, but I couldn't even be in the same conversation with Sam Alfano. Alfano was the kindest soul to ever walk the planet, and I wish I was a fraction of what he was.
I'm with you.
And to be honest with you, listen, the most hysterical part of that, you got the kindest, sweetest man that ever walked the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the father of 6 daughters and no boys. Like, if he would have been that type of grandfather that just locked himself in a garage and drank beer and tooled on a Harley, would be
understandable. Understandable.
I mean, he could have been that guy. He wasn't. He was the opposite.
My mom goes, you know, only one time did Granddaddy ever get on with me. I'm like, are you kidding me? One time? You know, it's because they raise their voice, or couple of sisters, maybe the twins, went out and smoked one cigarette and they found out, and he got onto him one time, and that was it. They said he got onto us one time. I'm like, this guy is a stalwart, man.
Right. I mean, like, I wish the people that would listen to this just knew him. I just had one day with him, because he makes that kind of impression. And when he died, just seeing all the people that had those stories of Sam Alfano. And, you know, recently I was looking at something on Facebook, and it was some sort of Facebook page that had old pictures and old things of Birmingham back in the 70s
and
60s. And there was a picture of Western Supermarket, which is where he used to work. And there were people who worked for Granddaddy that were talking about him, how awesome he was. And these were complete strangers. I don't know who these people are. And they're talking about Sam Alfano. Those types of memories that just come from a picture of a supermarket. That's the kind of guy that I try to aspire to be, and that can only hope to be a fraction of that.
You are correct. I know what you're talking about. I read every comment, and man, isn't that what we try to strive to be? That when people are talking about us, or they're saying the things that they say about Granddaddy, I think Mike Davis is on that way. I know he always thinks I'm exaggerating, but lots of people love to say great things about Mike. Mike, thank you for sharing your time with us, brother. You've got a lot to do, and you were so generous with your time to come on here. I really appreciate that. It's going to be a great podcast for sure. Thanks so much for lending your time and talking so much about the passion that you have for your life and your work.
Well, I appreciate it, brother. Best of luck with everything you're doing. I'm proud of you. I think it's awesome that you started this podcast. I love listening to it. I love hearing about it. I love hearing your friends and their testimonies. I crack up, and I don't even know if you intend this to be funny, but like, I look forward to the shine on so much.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. It's a highlight. So,
wow.
I want you to lean into this one for me.
It'll probably drop right about now on this podcast as we sign off.
Awesome.
Hey, it really means a lot with Mike. Please go check out Dirty Mo Radio. Just Google Dirty Mo Radio. Google Dale Jr. Download. This guy that we're talking to on episode 7 here has just a big voice, and people love to talk to him and call in for the show. Get the book, Racing to the Finish. It's a New York Times bestseller. Again, Mike Davis, thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Hey, love you, buddy. Take care.
All right, cuz. There you go. Mike Davis just coming in and laying it down. I hope you will check out Mike's TV shows and podcasts. It's just good comfort food for your eyes and ears. I know that much. What I also know is that SSP website I was telling you about, well, it's gotten pretty polished and features some great stuff, so go check it out. SimpsonStudioPodcast.com. From there, you will find each podcast, guest bios, a new thing we call Ministry of the Month, which highlights different local and national organizations that you can support and be a part of, even an SSP photo shoot. So check back often, because who knows, maybe one day there will be SSP shirts, stickers, hats. I don't know. I'm getting ahead of myself. Thanks again to my guest, Mike Davis. I hope you enjoy the show. This is Matt Simpson reminding you to get out from underneath that bushel and shine on, shine on. Shine on, shine on.